everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food. And today we're really going to dig deep because it is all about food, and I think we're going to be learning a lot today. I'm really excited about this program, and I want to bring on my first guest because I know he's a busy guy, and I want to get right to it. So my guest is Manuel Gonzalez, who was born in Mexico. He's managing director, head of the Western Region Corporate Clients for Rabobank, and founder of Food Bites. Formerly, he was country head of Rabobank Mexico and holds an MBA from Georgetown University. Welcome to It's All About Food, Manuel.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Well, actually, I'm not well. I'm actually running a slight fever, but I'll get better. But I'm very passionate about this show, and I wouldn't miss it for a moment, so I'm here. I have a lot of listeners on this program who are not only passionate about the food they eat, but they really care about the food system and how food gets to our table from all around the world, our food system, food politics, and certainly the investment behind food. So I thought you might begin by letting us know what Rabobank is, their mission, and then telling us about founding Food Bites.
Sure. Well, Rabobank is a Dutch bank, and it's a very old bank. We're over 100 years old. And it was actually born out of agricultural credit unions in the Netherlands that just grew and grew and became a bank. So we, you know, our roots are with agriculture and farmers. We're still a cooperative. So we are a private bank. We're not a public bank. And we have no shareholders because we are a cooperative. And in the Netherlands, it's the largest bank. It's an all-finance bank, but has a commanding leadership in financing agriculture and food. And outside of the Netherlands, we only work with food and agriculture. So we do from farmers all the way up to large companies, the whole value chain. That's our focus, is what we do. And our mission is to make food succeed, which sounds a little bit strange, but I guess it comes from our origins and you know, why we exist. Maybe because we're private, we can afford to have that kind of mission.
So the mission is to make food that feeds. I wanted to make sure I heard that properly.
Succeed, yeah.
Yeah, okay,
to
I like it.
To make food succeed, yeah.
But at the same time, you want to make money doing it.
Well, you know, if you want to be sustainable and if you want to be around, certainly you have to be a bank that makes money.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that sense, we certainly do business and we do it well. And you know, we know very well the sectors that we work in, and that's why we're good at it.
Okay, so that brings us to Food Bites. I just went to the Food Bites Brooklyn event last week. It was great. And why don't you tell me why you founded it and what Food Bites' mission is?
Well, we were looking at you know, there are many reasons why we started, but, you know, outside of the Netherlands, we're very focused on the larger food companies, on the larger farmers. And as you know, lately, probably in the last 10 years, a lot of new companies, new ideas are coming out. And I think more than ever, we see a lot more innovation, things that are more disruptive. And for us, being a knowledge bank and being focused in that, we thought we felt that we needed to know more about it. But also, we thought that we needed to help as much as we could the people that were putting all on the line to work on their ideas and to innovate, and they're risking a lot to make this happen. So we thought maybe we could have an event that could bring together people who were interested in helping them, in investing in them, or in partnering with them, and just to bring them in a place where they could talk and network and just find each other. And that's why we started doing it. Because, of course, we wanted to know about it. We wanted to learn about it, make it part of the knowledge that we have. But, you know, in that mission of making food succeed, there are three very distinct things that we do to make that happen, and one is to improve the access to finance and the access to networks and the access to knowledge to the people that are working in the food and agriculture business. So that was the idea, and then you were at the event. It's very much about networking. It's very much about the entrepreneur and about their ideas, and they are the stars. And there are other events where you have a lot of very interesting people talking, you know, conferences and things like that. But we thought that we needed to start something where the star was the entrepreneur, and that's why we created FoodBytes.
Well, that's great, and it's hard being in the food business. It's hard starting a food business. There are so many things that people have to consider, and they need as much support as they can get on many,
Absolutely.
Many levels. So thank you for doing that. Now, my understanding is for this particular event in Brooklyn, you had maybe over 200 people who wanted to be selected to present, and you only chose 10.
That is correct. We received 200 applications, and from the very first one, the very first Food Bites was February of last year, and it was in San Francisco. I'm based there in the West Coast, and from the very first moment, we had over 100 applications, and this time, 200. And so you can see also that this is growing, and it wasn't easy to choose. It was pretty difficult. There were many very interesting ideas. And I hope we did a good job, but I have to tell you that I would say 2/3 of them were very, very good, and which is encouraging. And it was very interesting to, and again, very hard to choose.
Okay, well, I want to talk about the companies that I liked who were at FoodBytes. So the People's Choice was True Made Foods, and that came with a really nice story about a guy who struggled with his weight and eating vegetables, and his wife ended up blending vegetables into ketchup and barbecue sauce, and now they're bottling them. And it's made with minimally processed ingredients, and everybody seemed to like it, and that's great. And then there were some high-tech kind of options to make growing food easier in terms of monitoring things with soil and moisture. Certainly we have a lot of great software now and apps and things where we can get a lot better control in order to maximize yields, minimize problems. So I see a lot of great future in that. There was another app that was involved, Food Temp. Forgot what it was called.
Yes.
That was involving
Fresh
keeping.
Temp.
Yeah, please.
Fresh Temp.
Fresh Temp. There we go. Right.
Yes.
using again technology with thermometers and measuring temperatures. I don't know how many people are aware. I got my food handling certification here in New York, and it's 15 chapters of intense stuff that can go on in a food manufacturing facility, and you have to be so careful. So things like this can make food manufacturing safer and easier. So that's good.
Yeah.
My favorite, my personal favorite, didn't win, but that was Sophie's Vegan Kitchen. And this is a company that's making vegan fish. Which some people may say, you can't say that. but what I see for the 21st century being disruptive technology is using plant ingredients to make products that people love that used to use animals and make basically the same products which are environmentally sustainable and less expensive and healthier. So that's where my heart is now. Yeah.
No, tell me.
No, you, please.
Yeah, well, yes. I think, you know, there are different tracks, different sectors in food and ag that are coming up. Certainly protein, alternative protein, and in that I would put not only a vegetable or plant-based protein, but also different ways of raising animals. So those two tracks in protein are, I think, very hot, and but I agree with you. In particular, plant-based protein is it's growing and it's increasing. And I think in general, with respect to food, what you see is that today the focus is not only on the ingredients and sustainability, but also on taste. And I think in the past, that was probably what people were missing, that this has to taste good, right? I mean, people need to like it in order to eat it. And if you really want to make an impact, your food has to taste well because people, you know, we're going to eat it and you're going to taste it and it has to be good. So that certainly is one. And I think in respect to agriculture, what we saw, Arable, which was the company we're talking about, it's a very interesting piece of hardware that you put in the land and just gives you incredible amounts of data that can help you improve what you're doing. Those are the things in precision agriculture, big data, which is the data management, robotics, which we didn't have this time, but we have before. All those things are very important. And I think in food, you're also going to find convenience as something that is coming up and it's improving. And one of the companies that we had in Food Bites that came from Israel, Dumatok,
mm-hmm.
which is sugar. I think also protein, very big in food, but also sugar. And by that I mean ways, you know, keeping the same taste profile of sugar, but making it less sugar. So that is very important as an ingredient, but also as you know, sugar itself for table. That's going to be very, very big. And those are the big tracks right now that we see in food. And there's a lot going on. And I think every single aspect of food and agriculture can and will be probably disrupted at some point.
Yes. Now, you may know this already, but I'm going to disagree. And I don't think that the world needs more animal proteins and seafood. I don't think they're sustainable. And it's true that as developing nations become more affluent, they're going to want to have animal proteins. But I would like to see a major educational force worldwide to steer people away from that, because we now have mounds of data showing that increased animal products cause diabetes, heart disease, increased risk of cancer, and yet we're kind of ignoring that when it comes to global manufacturing of animals. And we're learning at the same time where animal food causes health problems, plant foods strengthen the immune system and our health. And it's not necessarily one or the other. And so that's my issue. I would like to see us going away from figuring out how to create more animal protein. And, you know, if you really do the math, people don't like factory farming of animals. It doesn't have good press because it's horrific. It's environmentally devastating. It's horrifically cruel. But when we humanely raise animals, and I put humanely in quotes because I personally don't agree with it philosophically, we don't have the landmass on this planet to feed 7 billion people going up to 9 billion animals like we're eating in this country in the United States. We just can't do it unless we confine animals, which I don't think is a really good direction to go in. So ultimately, we're going to need to eat less animals. And that's how I feel about it.
Let me tell you that the biggest impact in animal consumption is going to be when the plant-based protein is really satisfies the taste of mm-hmm. people, and then it'll happen naturally.
I hope so. I really look forward to that. I've been doing it for 28 years, and I think it tastes great. okay, so let's talk a little bit more about sustainability, because one of the companies that was one of the 10 featured companies was Love the Wild, where they talk about sustainable fish. And
yes.
I think that's an oxymoron. I don't think we can have sustainable fish. Our oceans are depleted already. We can't take any more out. We're doing tremendous damage. We're just learning about the microorganisms in the oceans that are responsible for the oxygen that we breathe. There's so little we know about the oceans, and we're killing them.
Well, Love the Wild is focusing on aquaculture. So I think they would agree with you, and which is why they want to be 100% aquaculture. That is the point. That's why they meant.
Yeah, but aquaculture, where do they get the feed from to feed the fish? I mean, most aquaculture today gets smaller fish to feed the fish, or they grow soy to feed the fish. It's really inefficient. I personally, from everything I've read and studied, I think sustainable fish is an oxymoron. So you heard it from me.
Okay.
But there's probably a business in it now. I just hope we don't destroy the planet in doing so. And another thing I noticed that so Rabobank is into a number of priorities, including palm oil, and that's getting a lot of press too because people don't believe it's sustainable, or that the folks that say they're making sustainable palm oil really aren't. What's going on with palm oil today?
That's a hard question for me because that's something that mostly you will see in regions that are different to the one where I work in.
Okay.
So probably in Asia and South America. I know that in the past that a lot of things have changed, but I couldn't give you a good account of what's going on in palm oil.
Okay, very good. So let's get back to Food Bites, the event last week, because I wanted to say there was a lot of great food there, and I really appreciated that there was a menu card on every table. You had to be able to read fine print to see the different dots that let you know whether it was vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, but I really appreciated having all that labeling. And some of the food was really, really outstanding. Do you know who provided the food?
Yes, the hall, the tavern. I mean, the
oh, that
they
space, the venue.
Everything. Yes, the venue.
Yeah, they did a great job. And then I was really happy to be a recipient of the Gotham Greens at the end of the event. And apparently they had a lot more than attendees, so I took a lot of boxes home with me.
Yes.
But I'm very excited about Gotham Greens as a company.
They have a beautiful product, and I think they're going to do really, really well. They're very passionate. And, I mean, talking to them is like going through wine tasting and tasting vegetables, which is amazing. And they do a great job. I think they're a very exciting company.
So they're in New York City, they're in Chicago, and they build greenhouses on top of buildings. In urban environments.
Yes.
And the food is incredible. And it's genius.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something that
Absolutely.
I get really, really excited about. I love greens. I think that's the most important food for us to be eating, leafy green vegetables. And we should be growing them in every space we possibly can. And that's what
And that's
doing.
One of the developments that you see in ag, vertical agriculture, CD agriculture, all those things. And precisely, doing what you're saying, as you know, producing more food in smaller spaces, a lot of the green, and also local food, you know, that respects where you are. Certainly, yeah, that is a big development that we're going to see moving forward, more and more, more efficient and better.
Okay, so where's the next Food Bites, and what can people who are interested in building their companies do about getting involved or seeing if they can get involved?
Next Food Bites is San Francisco in June. We're almost sure it's going to be June 16, but we're looking at it. It's going to depend a little bit on the venue. We want something that is similar to what you saw, that has that kind of space. But most probably it's going to be that day, June 16. If not, it's going to be around that date, but it's mid-June. And then in October, we will be in Boulder, Colorado, which is a place that's innovating quite a bit in food.
That's great. What about Chicago?
Well, next year we will move around a little bit and find new places. Austin is another great place.
Yeah.
And we found that there are a number of places in the U.S. that are they want to innovate and do new things. So it's always difficult to decide where to do it.
Right. Okay. Well, I was thrilled to be a part of this year's Food Lights in Brooklyn, and thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. And best of luck. I hope to see you in the next one, too.
Okay, very good. Manuel Gonzalez of Food Bites, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's see. I want to talk a little bit more about the event that I went to, some of the things that I was really excited about. If you go to my What Vegans Eat Day 387 post, you can see my report on it and all the food that I ate, because it is all about food. So the most amazing thing that I tried, truly, was the vegan smoked salmon. And, well, I have to admit, I was never really a fan of smoked salmon back in the day when I was young and people would put it on bagels. But I tried it, and the flavor was as close to my memory of what smoked salmon was, and I really liked it. Amazing. And I think with a good vegetable vegan cream cheese, a good bagel, I don't think people would know the difference, frankly. So that's exciting. And the thing is, you can buy it online if you're interested in trying it, but I think it comes in like 10 packages or something, so you have to buy a lot of it, make sure you're going to like it. But I thought it was really exciting. And another product that I tried by that same company, Sophie's Kitchen, is their crab cakes. Really fun. They have a number of vegan options: breaded vegan shrimp, vegan crab cake, vegan lobster mac and cheese, vegan seafood jambalaya, and of course the salmon and probably some other products. Pretty amazing stuff. And like I was saying before, personally, I don't think there's any such thing as sustainable fish, and I think we're kidding ourselves. From what I've read from a number of environmental sources, we have these agencies that certify whether certain companies are sustainable in fish production. And there are environmentalists that are suspect of these certifications, including the Marine Stewardship Council and others. I remember talking to Dr. Richard Openlander when he wrote his book, Food Choice and Sustainability, and he goes into detail about these fish sustainability labels and how they can't be trusted. And, of course, when money comes into play, as it always does, these organizations that offer certifications and labeling, they charge a fee. The more companies that want certifications, the more fees they get. So it's kind of tempting to give more certifications. Let's see, what else? So that is pretty much it for the Food Bites event. And another thing I wanted to bring up before I go to my next guest is something that I can't tell you how excited I am. I'm going to burst. But you may have seen it in yesterday's New York Times, maybe a couple days ago, New York Times, in the business section, called Trade Group Lobbying for Plant-Based Foods Takes a Seat in Washington. And this is really exciting. Michelle Simon, we had her on the program years ago, and I'm going to have her back at the end of the month to talk exactly about this. But she's a public health lawyer and food policy advocate, and she's founded this new group. And it's starting out with 23 companies, including companies like Tofurky and the new companies that are making protein products from plants. And what happens is they are going to now be represented, safety in numbers, strength in numbers. They will be competing against the most powerful lobbies in Washington, and this is a wonderful new beginning. I'm very excited. More on that coming up very soon. Okay, let's move on, shall we? I want to bring on my next guest because she's here already, and I'm excited about that because I really think this is going to be fun. We're going to lighten up and talk about my favorite subject, food, in terms of eating it and how delicious it can be. And I've got Stephanie Bogdanich. She'll tell me in a minute how I butchered her name. and she's one of four authors of The Taco Cleanse, the tortilla-based diet proven to change your life with over 75 vegan recipes. I just read this book, and it's really a lot of fun. Welcome to It's All About Food, Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, hi, how are you? Did you have your taco today?
I did. A taco a day keeps the doctor away, that's what we always say.
Well, I probably need them because I have a fever today.
Oh, yeah, tacos can help with that.
Tacos can help, so I read.
You know, you can
awesome.
Sweat it out.
Yeah. Okay, so just give me a little history. How did this taco cleanse get started?
Well, all of the authors are from Austin, and we were sitting around and we were drinking margaritas and talking about how Jessica had said that she'd realized that she hadn't eaten anything besides tacos all day. And we were talking about how I wonder how long we could go for. And she was like, oh, we should try and do it for 3 days. And I was like, 3 days would be easy. Let's try and do it for a month. And so we decided to eat nothing but tacos for a whole month, and we all four did, and it was really fun, and we loved it, and we ended up writing recipes and a little zine for all of our friends, and then it ended up getting turned into a whole book because everybody wants a taco cleanse.
But does it really cleanse? That's the question.
Well, it depends on what your definition of cleanse is.
Yes, what is your definition?
We believe that as taco scientists...
Yes,
that
you're a taco scientist. Very good.
Does
that mean you put T-S at the end of your name?
Sometimes. We all have different degrees. I've got my doctor of tacoology.
Oh, right.
And Molly is a professor of pseudoscience. And... So we've all got different little things. Jessica's an RTD, a registered taco dietitian.
Excellent. But, so you're telling me, define what a cleanse means to you.
Yeah, for us, you know, the typical cleanse of having juice or master cleanse, something like that, where you starve yourself in order to, like, fit into a smaller pair of pants is just kind of ridiculous. The whole idea of detoxifying your liver. You don't need to do that. Your liver does it fine for you. If you, the whole idea of detoxifying is kind of scientifically unproven. If you want to detoxify, it's because, you know, you've been poisoned and they'll take you into the hospital. You don't need to detoxify because you've been eating, you know, ice cream. And so we took the idea of cleanse as that it would be a cleanse for your mind and to get over these relationships with food of being this thing that you have to be really puritanical about and instead just enjoying it and enjoying plant-based food and having fun with it.
All right. Can you define a taco?
Yes. Okay.
Please do.
A taco for us is anything that fits into an unleavened piece of grain, bread, tortilla, or tortilla-like substance. Originally, before we came up with that definition, we had all sorts of things, and we got kind of confusing. Like, we have a couple of waffle tacos in the book, and we decided if we could grandfather those in. But in the end, we couldn't go with the pancake in the same way, because we had to make rules somewhere.
All right, let's bring up the pancake for a second. We got the taco police here, because I was looking at all of your wonderful recipes, starving and like going nuts, reading them, of course. But there is one dessert taco that looks a lot like a pancake.
Wait, the crepe taco?
The chocolate raspberry dessert taco looks a lot like a pancake.
Yeah, you know, it really does. The most important thing is that a burrito isn't a taco. It's all about the single fold. And that's how you know what you're really getting.
But you could take a large tortilla and fold it in half, and then that qualifies as a taco.
Yeah, then it'll be a giant taco.
A giant taco, which you warn against.
Yeah, we like our tacos to be small and delightful so that you can eat many tacos.
Okay, so I want to talk about my earliest taco memories. So it was in the late 70s, I think. I was in high school, and you probably weren't even born yet. I got tacos from Jack in the Box.
Oh, gross.
They were
with
gross.
American cheese slice.
Oh, my God. It was this grounded up brown oily plop. And the taco itself was so oily, it was disgusting. And then I moved on to, I moved to California and things kind of cleaned up from there. I'm originally from New York. I'm in New York now. And I discovered avocado and guacamole and tacos, and it was a beautiful thing. But then I moved to France in the early 90s, and they didn't have tacos there. The only thing they had were those hard, disgusting ones in the box, like El Paso or something.
Right, like the kind we had in elementary school.
Yeah. We didn't have them in elementary school. I did exactly what you recommend in the book. I ended up making my own tortillas.
Nice.
Were you able to get...
Did you make the flour ones there then? I'm sure you couldn't find masa.
Yeah, I made the flour ones, yeah. They're easier, too. When you make a wheat flour, it's a little easier to roll rather than squash.
Well, if you've got the press, though, it's super easy to make the corn tortillas. I can make them, enough for a meal in about 5 minutes.
I'm just actually having another taco memory flash.
Okay,
I think I was living in California, and I think I bought at one of these artsy-fartsy kind of home stores a tortilla press. And I went looking for masa harina and made it and used the press. That was amazing. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yes. Fun stamping them out.
Yeah, it's good to make them. Have you ever heard?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. You know, they originally, before we could get masa in this country, I read that tortillas used to come in cans.
Oh, already made.
How weird is that? Have you ever thought of anything more gross than a canned tortilla?
At least it wouldn't be hard and crunchy, probably, though.
That's true.
Which is pretty gross, because they're like cardboard.
Yeah, they definitely are.
All right, something we need to talk about in terms of the taco and the tortilla and the quality ingredients, which are really important. I always like to talk about what's in your blank, like what's in your peanut butter, for example. I rage on this. You should only have peanuts in your peanut butter, not hydrogenated oils and sugar and all kinds of junk. But looking at the back of most of these corn and wheat tortillas in the stores today, the ingredients are scary.
Really? Because, I live in Texas, so I have access to really good tortillas, and I'm vegan, too, so I'm always checking recipe titles. And I don't buy tortillas very often. I usually make them, or I usually buy already-made tacos. But in the case of, corn tortillas, it's almost always just corn and water and salt.
Right. That's what it should be. And, we go to Whole Foods and get their organic ones, which are refrigerated because they don't last long once they're made, and that's what you want. But if you look at the popular brands, Mission and some others, the list of ingredients is like lines long. They have preservatives. They have cellulose. They have all kinds of things. It's like, what is this doing in my taco?
They're probably just trying to keep it soft.
Look out for the ingredients in your tortillas, everybody.
Yeah. Well, and at least try to make them once. We have quite a few recipes in the Taco Cleanse book, but you can just Google it too. And so many people I've convinced since writing the Taco Cleanse to try making their own tortillas because it's just surprisingly easy. It's way easier than just about any other, you know, it's easier than making bread or bagels or pizza or any of those things that are leavened with yeast. You just stamp them out and they take about a minute on each side to cook.
Yep, they are pretty easy. And I never thought of making plantain tortillas. Those look awesome.
Which ones?
Plantain.
Oh, yeah. That we put in because we wanted to have a recipe. We wanted to be able to have every kind of ear be able to come on the Taco Cleanse. And there are so many people who are afraid of gluten or soy or corn or all these things.
Yeah.
So we came up with a recipe that is made out of just, you know, plants, which in this case is plantain, and a little bit of starch. And it tastes surprisingly more like a tortilla than it does a plantain. Like, it's not a sweet, yummy fried plantain like you get at a Cuban place. It definitely tastes more like a regular tortilla.
Wow, I definitely want to try that. I was very excited about plantain tortillas.
Yeah, I love fried plantains in my tortillas. Like, there's a recipe for gallo pizza, which I got hooked on in Costa Rica, and I love that with fried plantains. It's just the best.
I just came back from Costa Rica, and I had fried plantains there, but I've never had the plantain tortilla.
Yeah, but I don't think it's... I doubt
that will come very soon.
Costa Rica. And then we also really love the Dutch waffle tacos with the vegan sausage and maple syrup. That one is super yummy.
Yeah, so the idea is, you like have your Ten Commandments. A burrito is not a taco. But if you fold a tortilla in half, it can be considered a taco, even though it may be a little too big.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is that because you don't want to overload it?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the big problems that beginners have.
I bought some mammoth burritos, and you eat one of those, and it's like a bomb. It has landed in your belly. It's just so huge and so filling.
Totally. Burritos are something that I get when I'm like, okay, I'm starving. I'm going to watch TV. I don't want to move or do anything the rest of the night, so I'll get a giant burrito and live with that.
I have a question. I'm looking at, you've got some great recipes for what you call supplements.
That's right. There's a whole chapter on supplements, because any good diet book is going to have a chapter on supplements.
and supplements are martinis and tequila drinks.
That's right. We found a lot of cleansing properties in tequila.
I'm looking at this picture opposite the Everyday Mexican Martini with the martini in it, and it has like black salt on the top. What is that?
Yeah, it's just black salt. It's made from Hawaiian lava.
Wow. So
there's actually
black salt is an Indian thing,
and that's actually pink, but this black salt was made with lava, and I just did it for the picture. You don't need to use black salt. But it is really nice and really, like, minerally.
Does it taste different?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it tastes minerally.
It's kind of fun to experiment with. And it's definitely stronger, too. I really like smoked salt, too. If you ever get your hands on that, it can add a lot to, especially if you're making, like, a pot of beans, just adding, like, a teaspoon of smoked salt can add that nice bit of smokiness that you don't get in the plant-based diet as much.
I also love the beer garita, where you actually...
Yeah, the beer garita is an awesome thing. I don't know if I've seen that anywhere else, but they are fun.
This is original. You've got a bottle of beer poured upside down into a cup, a margarita cup.
Yeah, you kind of have to plunge your beer into the margarita. It's great on a super hot day.
So it slowly... empties out as the liquid in the cup goes away, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, beautiful. That's funny. Okay, and then you have, I love that you've got the holidays covered.
Yeah, because, you know, any diet, that's going to be a struggle. but not with the taco cleanse. There's a taco for all occasions, as we've learned.
Yes. Okay, my favorite, all-time favorite, is the one for Passover. When those who observe Passover, I come from a Jewish background, I'm not religious at all, but I'm into food for all holidays. And you have the collard tortilla, which is a tortilla made from a collard grain.
Okay.
And you add these typical foods for Passover, roasted beets, horseradish sauce, and toasted matzo kernels.
Yeah, you got to have that little bit of crunch from the toasted matzo.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. And what else here? I like your Halloween taco costumes.
At one of our book signings, we had my dog. He was in the taco costume for the book signing. We were like, see, the taco dog, and people were very excited about that. And then at the end of the night, my boyfriend was putting him in the car, and he was taking the costume off, and someone yelled from across the parking lot, "That's not a taco dog. That's just a dog in a taco costume."
Okay. Now, you've got some really good... This is a very comprehensive book. Very comprehensive.
Oh, yeah.
And you cover taco yoga positions. Beautiful.
Yes. We actually have one of our friends who's been teaching Iyengar-style yoga for almost 20 years, and she did the taco yoga section for us. And her blog is called Vegan Eats and Treats, and she actually just made a video of taco yoga, too. So if any listeners want to check it out, it's really funny. And she's giving away a copy of the book, too.
I actually look forward to doing the crossword at the end of the book. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, the crossword all works out.
And I have to say that I had the guacamole find the taco pretty quickly. That maze wasn't too challenging.
Yeah, that's more of a beginner.
Yeah.
<Hey. laughs>
And it's lovely, and you have a lovely certificate of completion at the end of the book, which will make any participant in the taco cleanse feel very, very proud.
Yeah, we've been watching people fill them out and put them on their refrigerators on Instagram, and that's been really fun.
Have you ever heard, I was just talking to this, the founder of Food Bites, not sure if you're familiar with it, but they're a bank that invests in agricultural businesses, and they had an event in Brooklyn last week. And there was this one company, I didn't see them there, although they emailed me and said they were going to be there, called FlatEv, FlatEv.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they make an appliance. It looks like kind of like a toaster, but the opening is on the bottom. And they sell these little pods of tortilla dough, kind of like a Keurig, and you put the pot in the machine and the tortilla comes out at the bottom. And they have a cute little commercial that makes it like it's not that easy to make your own tortillas, like you were saying, because they're so time consuming. But
yeah, I can imagine the oh no, there's dough all over the floor.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting unit. I don't know where it's going to go, but, it's out there. FlatEv.com. Anybody want to check it out? Then the other thing is the ingredients. When I was at this event last week, there was a company called Macienda, and they're promoting heirloom varieties of corn from Mexico, because unfortunately a lot of our corn is getting contaminated because we grow so much genetically modified corn today.
Yeah, you really can't, since corn air pollinates, you can't really isolate it. And there are some beautiful kinds of corn in Mexico that make such colorful tortillas, like every color of the rainbow.
Okay, now tell me, have you had some celebrities take up the taco cleanse? I think you did. I know I read about them.
Yeah, well, in January, in an interview, Jennifer Aniston said that she was buying the book. And so when that happened, we got this explosion of people saying, oh, my God, Jennifer Aniston loves the taco cleanse. And That was a lot of fun because...
Yeah. Did that help sales?
It just went everywhere. We were on E! True Hollywood Story and everything.
And
or E! Entertainment.
Did you ever talk to Jennifer?
No, but we sent her a signed copy.
Oh, good. Because I thought she wasn't a very vegan-friendly person.
Yeah. I don't think that she even knew it was vegan. I think that she just saw a taco cleanse and was like, oh, that sounds fun. And then the next thing you know, like, on E! Entertainment News is like, is the taco cleanse how Jennifer Aniston got her red carpet body? And we're like, no.
No.
That's definitely not how she got her red carpet body. That's a combination of genetics and probably a lot of personal trainers.
Okay, now, when you make, a lot of your recipes contain ingredients that, or sometimes, or you recommend that you can use a lot of pre-made ingredients.
Yeah, because we want taco cleansing to be really easy. And so you can go the homemade route, but we want it to be approachable to people who've never tried vegan food, too. So we always recommend, like, the best vegan product out there. For example, we have the Infinite Fish Taco, which involves breading your own tofu, which takes like 3 different bowls, but it tastes really good, and it's a lovely recipe. But if you don't want to do all that and mess up your kitchen, you can buy the Gardein fish fillets, which are really delicious, and you know, you just pop them in the oven in 10 minutes, they're done.
Right. Okay, so the Taco Cleanse book is out, and what are your plans after? This.
We're talking about making an all-gluten book next.
All-gluten?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so that's like a lot of seitan and...
Yeah, and pasta and cupcakes and...
And
all
for those
foods
that can't eat gluten, they know to stay away from it and not even open
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Don't even look at the book.
Yeah, oh, that's sad. I don't have a gluten intolerance, although I think sometimes wheat gives me a headache, but that doesn't keep me from eating it. I just don't eat as much as I used to. But wheat has certainly gotten a bad rap, and people need to know that if you don't have celiac disease and if you don't have an intolerance, as long as you're eating whole, minimally processed forms of wheat, you should be fine.
It's definitely a big popular diet. Like here... the vegan restaurants, you'll see people order the seitan on the gluten-free bread. And the seitan is
oh, that's
100%
funny.
Gluten. Yeah.
Do they even know what they're doing? That's funny.
That's the question.
Well, okay, let's talk about that for a minute. Okay, I don't want to judge here, but I'm just maybe judging. I'm observing. There are people out there who like to give themselves labels. They mm-hmm. like to call themselves vegan, they like to call themselves vegetarian, or they say that they eat gluten-free, and then they see something that they like, which, let's say, isn't vegan, and they said they're vegan, and they're like, oh, can I get that? Or somebody orders, like you said, the seitan on gluten-free bread. I mean, what's that about?
I don't know. We have... a part in the book called Is the Taco Cleanse Right for You? And one of the questions is, do you experience recurring feelings of hunger on a daily basis? But then everyone's favorite one is, do you enjoy attention from peers based on dietary restrictions?
Yes. And that's definitely a trend.
It definitely is. And I don't know what that's about. For us, you know, being vegan, I think that kind of one of the reasons we got so into the idea of the taco cleanse is that we were just so tired of, like, the nutrition people kind of taking over vegan food. Because for us, we're not in it just because we want to lose weight or anything like that. We're in it because we love animals and we love the world and we don't want to see any more environmental destruction caused by, you know, meat, cows being in the... chopping down trees in the Amazon so that cows can graze is just not what we're... That's where we stand. And a lot of times people think that you're vegan just because you want to have these dietary restrictions for fun. And so I think that a lot of it comes from that for us.
I'm really glad you brought that up. That's a very important point. for us not to forget, those of us who are vegan, why we're vegan. For me, it was always about animals, and the health and the environment were just amazing bonuses.
Yeah, bonuses.
Amazing bonuses.
And I think that the health brings a lot of people to veganism, which is great because it is a very healthy way to live. But I think that at the forefront, it's about, you know, cruelty to animals. That's why we avoid all the animal products in our clothes and makeup and everything else.
Yeah, but it makes it a little harder, getting back to what we were just talking about with labels and things, when people say that they are something that they aren't. It makes it harder for those of us who are.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, because people think, but this just has a little in it, you know?
Uh-huh. You can just eat around
so please,
that, right?
If you're not pregnant, don't say you're pregnant. If you're not vegan, don't say you're vegan. Say you eat a plant-based diet and, you know, occasionally maybe something else.
Yeah.
Yes.
People just love saying that they're vegan when they're not. I don't get it, because being vegan, people just give me a lot of shit.
You have to want to have that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's you have to believe in something very strong. And I'm bringing up the guy that I was just talking to. I don't like to have sensational kind of programs and argue with people. That's not who I am. But I made it clear that they're a company which supports all kinds of, quote, sustainable businesses. Some of them really aren't sustainable. But they see them as sustainable, and they see them, I think, as profit centers. Sustainable fish, sustainable palm oil, sustainable beef. You know, they're oxymorons.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you could have sustainable beef in a world with this many people eating beef.
Exactly. Just do the math. You can't do it. There's not enough land mass, period.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay, well, I really believe, and he actually said this, my guest, Manuel Gonzalez, that these plant-based alternatives, these plant-based businesses at some point should take over. And I hope to see that sooner than later.
Yeah, I see that as the future too. And like you were talking about Jack in the Box, people are so attached to their meat, and they're like, oh, I can't have meat because, you know, I can't go vegan because I love meat and whatever. And it's like, but you'll eat at Jack in the Box, people. And is that really so good? Would you know any different if you were eating meat or if you were eating some soy crumble in your nasty Jack in the Box tortilla? You know,
exactly.
No way.
You don't know what that stuff is at the bottom of your oily tortilla. You just don't know. But you mentioned
soy. Yeah, and wouldn't you rather have it made out of soy than out of,
absolutely.
You know,
can you talk about
weird
soy kernels?
Animal parts?
You mentioned them a few times in the book.
About who?
Soy curls.
Oh, soy curls, sure.
Yeah.
They're actually a really minimally processed food. They're just straight up the soybeans that are soaked and blended and then dehydrated into strips. They're made by Seventh-day Adventists, who are often vegetarian. I think they're from Oregon. And so you can't find them everywhere because it's a pretty small company, but they're totally worth ordering a box. One of our co-authors has a vegan store called Rabbit Food Grocery, and you can get them there. But they are just the most delightful vegan ingredient because they're super high in protein. They have this wonderful texture. They're really easy to make. You just soak them usually I soak them in vegetable broth and then fry them in a pan with whatever ingredients. And we've got quite a few recipes in the book that use soy curls. You can use seitan instead, but soy curls are just so easy, and we all really like them. They're super popular among vegans these days.
I'm glad you brought it up because I haven't had them in ages, and I just kind of forgot about them, and now I have to look for them again, soy curls.
Yeah, I wonder if you can find them up there. I know there's that vegan store.
Sure. Yeah. Now, before we go, I just wanted to mention that I appreciated you adding at the end of your book some resources. And you mentioned Vegan Tacos, Authentic and Inspired Recipes for Mexico's Favorite Street Food by Jason Weirich. And I spoke to Jason when his book came out. And I just want to say that book is very different from your book. They're both wonderful.
Very different. But I love his book, too. Yeah, it's great.
He's an amazing chef. He really knows what he's talking about.
Really authentic recipes.
Yes, he goes into great detail. And I just went crazy over that cookbook because it was just amazing. That's all.
Yeah, we love that one. And we love Viva Vegan, too, by Terry Hope Romero.
Yeah, she lives here in my neighborhood in Queens.
She sure does. Yeah, she just came out with a new book, too. But Viva Vegan is my favorite one.
Which is?
Viva Vegan.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of recipes in that book.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Well, Stephanie, this has really been delightful, and now I got to figure out how I can get a taco really quickly and get over my fever.
I know. That's the problem. Several people have written, and they're like, I'm having trouble getting off the taco cleanse. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of becomes a way of life. Like, that's why I could never leave Austin, because how could I not have breakfast tacos every day? I mean,
well,
what do other
dangerous.
People eat?
You can stay on a taco cleanse for life, can't you?
Yeah, definitely.
There you. That's
Hopefully.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you, Stephanie.
Thanks so much for having me, and have a wonderful day.
Okay, you too. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Hi. Whew. All right. We have about a minute left or so. And that was totally fun, wasn't it? Taco Cleanse. It's just a really fun book. It's fun to read. And I probably make a great gift because it's very fun. And the recipes are really, really good. I really like it. Can I say really, 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 really enough? Meanwhile, back to Responsible Eating and Living, where I live. I hope you've been checking out our most recent recipes, and my daily blog is now on day, what am I on, day 391, for goodness sakes. The thing about prepared food, sometimes they really come in handy, and right now we have this addiction, I think, for Sky Valley Organic Sriracha Sauce, which yesterday we put on some tofu and green beans and gave it a real authentic Thai flavor. You know, that sometimes that's all you need is just a great prepared sauce that has quality ingredients. So check that out if you like hot and spicy. All right, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I'm going to go and have some tea and take care of myself, and you should have a delicious week.